You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back here on New Hampshire Now. With 914.50 and ConcordNewsRadio.com, I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program this hour. New Hampshire Now brought to you by the Prescription Center and this segment of the show presented by P&N Automotive. I trust Chuck. He's the best in the capital region. I know it's so hard to find an honest garage. P&N Automotive at 140 Pleasant Street. Phone number 225-4313. Again, that's 225-4313. This edition of WKXL On the Road, this time coming to you from Hyde Park, New York, is presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, as well as Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services, the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce, Dennehy and Boulay, and the Spradlin Group. We head now to the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site for conversation about our nation's 32nd president. Welcome back here on Hampshire Now. With 914.50 and ConcordNewsRadio.com, it is Labor Day, and we decided to take the ride down to Hyde Park, New York, of course, the Yankees playing the Red Sox this weekend as well, and we'll hear more about that on Matt Bonner's show coming up tonight. But wanted to focus for this hour of the program on one of our greatest presidents, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And considering that it is Labor Day, and considering the fact that, in my view, since the passing of my grandmother's generation, it seems like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, for whatever reason, in public consciousness, is not receiving the appropriate due for how he led this nation. It might be one of the greatest presidents ever. Decided to take the trip here, and we're going to do an overview of his presidency and encourage individuals to visit his house, learn about his legacy and that of Eleanor Roosevelt as well. And we're going to be joined right now by Fran. She, I am told, knows the most about Franklin Roosevelt, anybody here at the House Museum and Library. And Fran, first off, let's start by talking about a little bit about the legacy of Franklin Roosevelt. And if you look at what a president is and who he should be, he was tested in ways that most presidents were never tested. He pushed forth legislation, which you can argue from a conservative or liberal perspective in regards to the lasting legacy of that legislation, but was appropriate and needed at that time, during that time, to bring America out of the Great Depression. And to me, he, for whatever reason, after the Greatest Generation, has fallen, for whatever reason, again, out of the realm of the greatest presidents ever. Is there any rationale or reason as to why that you think that may have taken place, and just also discuss his legacy as well?
Well, certainly Franklin Roosevelt created the world that we live in today. Things like Social Security, unemployment insurance, minimum wage, the FDIC, mm-hmm. which protects our monies in the banks, the Securities and Exchange Commission, all were created under FDR. And certainly he created big government. And today, people are looking toward small government. Mm-hmm. And so back then, the only way for him to really get legislation passed and create programs was to create large government. Mm-hmm. He felt it was needed to help people who were devastated by economic depression. And people then looked upon him as a savior of the times, because so many people had lost everything, their homes, their jobs, their life savings. 33% of the American people were without jobs. Mm-hmm. And so even back then, during the first 100 days, Congress worked with him, both Democrats and Republicans, together as a team to do something, mm-hmm. because the country was getting into more and more hard times. I mean, this had been going on for 4 years before FDR was elected, and there was no end in sight.
I think you make a really good point about the size and scope of the federal government. Particularly, we'll look at it in the context of Hurricane Harvey right now. And everyone is for small government except when they're not. When there's a situation that presents itself in which the federal government is needed to help individuals who have lost everything, whether it's in the Great Depression that you're describing now or what's going on in Houston. And when, that takes place and Americans see other Americans, their friends, their neighbors, or people they don't even know, they're watching on TV struggling, then all of a sudden, Americans want government to be there. They want large government. And to me, again, Franklin Roosevelt was reacting to the time period and giving the people what they needed and wanted. And that is what a president should do. When you're confronted with challenges, obviously, you're supposed to take on those challenges and find solutions to those problems. And that seemed to be, in reading about him and having been here in the past and studying about him, that was what he, in my view, was best. His best asset was he was always up for the challenge and presented solutions to problems, whether it was World War II, whether it was with the Great Depression. And these are arguably the greatest challenges our nation has faced outside of its infancy.
That's very true. And we have to think about the fact that FDR didn't come into office thinking that he had the perfect solutions for any of these problems. But what he was willing to do was to try something. Mm-hmm. And then if that didn't work, he said, well, let's try something else. So that's how he felt about it. He wasn't there to put together a plan that would work for everything because he didn't know if it was going to work or not. But at least he was willing to experiment and try.
How did he, you know, obviously these days, one of the biggest challenges that a president faces is obstructionism and Congress, whether it's everybody in the same party or in different parties. How was he able to convince and work with individuals in Congress in order to make sure that these initiatives came to fruition or that they had full support? It seemed like he was extremely adept at, you know, what we've heard today as messaging, where he was able to connect with the American people, understood the American people, but also pushed forth a message which would have constituencies put pressure on whomever was in Washington in order to achieve his goals.
Well, initially, certainly during the first 100 days, as I mentioned, he was able to get Congress to work together as a team. I mean, he would put forth legislation and they would pass it no matter what. I mean, the times were so bad, so dire, they knew that they had to work together to make a difference here, because if they didn't, then it would continue as it was. He certainly appealed to the average person who had lost so much, and his message always was that we have to work together to get this economy going again. And he kept saying that there are jobs out there that we can create, mm-hmm, to not just help these people out who had lost so much, but to help the infrastructure of the American nation, which was collapsing as well. And that was the way to get people back to work. And then if they were back at work, they can spend money, and of course that would improve the economy. And that was his philosophy, and he always kept putting that message out there that these are the people that we have to help so that we can get the economy going again.
It's Labor Day weekend, and I'm curious as to when you look out at what Franklin Roosevelt did for the American worker, what you see in terms of his accomplishments, his commitment, because that seemed to be a big part of this. And as you mentioned, it was a challenging time period, you know, for the American worker in that they were looking for work, but also looking for a fair shake, looking for the opportunity to provide for their families and earn a fair wage.
Yes, I mean, you know, people today say, oh, well, FDR created the welfare state, but he didn't create the welfare state, because what he wanted was people to work at something. Yes, the government would provide jobs, various kinds of work, but they were working. This was not a handout where people would just get money for free. In order for them to get money, they had to work at something. And he wasn't just thinking about one group of people, like construction workers, for example, or day laborers. He was also thinking about people like, who worked in theater, mm-hmm, librarians, musicians, teachers, you name it. He created jobs for these people to work at. And yes, they were, as I say, funded by the government, but at the same time, it was putting money back into the economy, and they were doing something to earn that money, something that was really needed throughout the country for some project that really needed to be done.
Final thing, as we look at kind of a broad scope of Franklin Roosevelt's presidency in the next couple segments here on the program, we'll learn about FDR the person and also what we can learn about him via visiting his home here in Hyde Park, New York. A lot of the programs which FDR pushed forth in the New Deal have, as you mentioned, kind of come into under criticism over the years and have said that, you know, he... Again, I'm interested in your interpretation of whether or not he meant for these programs to last. And what I mean is, you know, or have they become diluted over the years? The question of, you know, Social Security and its solvency moving forward, which I think was a program that he wanted to see, you know, continue over a long period of time. But welfare and other stopgap measures of the New Deal. Did you think that he expected, you know, these programs to still be in place 80, 85 years after his, after these were passed into law?
Well, certainly he expected Social Security to continue. And he said that he created that program so it could never be dismantled by anybody. He felt it was very much needed for people who were older, who perhaps couldn't earn a living at some point in life and yet would be contributing to a system where now they could get some money in their older years. Some of the government programs that he started to get people back on his on their feet, no, I'm sure he didn't think that it would last forever. He probably thought that eventually industry would get back on its feet and be able to employ people, or construction jobs would be created as a result of some of these programs. So it was just a way to initially help the economy, and then either the states would take over or private industry would have the means of employing people.
Social Security was really a safety net for working people, the individuals who were, you know, the hands that built America that didn't have, you know, pensions or anything of that nature. It gave the opportunity for that working person to be able to retire at some point in time and to have the ability to, you know, have a life in retirement. So to me, I mean, that's the greatest gift that FDR gave to working people was, in fact, you know, Social Security, as we speak on Labor Day weekend. We're going to head outside, take in the grounds, talk a little bit more about FDR's time here at Hyde Park, who he was as an individual. And a lot of times, you know, when individuals like yourself, historians, will look at, go into the archives, they'll be able to determine a lot about individuals via their writings. And we'll talk a little about that as well when we return. This is New Hampshire Now from FDR's estate in Hyde Park, New York. We'll come back with more after this.
Listening to New Hampshire Now on WKXL.
The harbor and the grocery have gone away, but they have low prices every day. Three times go, they brought in two. What's a working fella supposed to do? Walmart, they killed the country store.
Listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back. You're on New Hampshire Now. 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by Cheney's Apple House Furniture. Don't you dare buy furniture without checking out Cheney's Lowe's Low Prices. To peruse their selection, go to NHFurnitureStore.com. NewHampshireNow.com. For a special edition of this Labor Day, New Hampshire Now, I headed to Springwood, which was the home of Franklin D. Roosevelt, childhood home, which really was his home throughout the course of his life in Hyde Park, New York. He decided from an early age that he was going to be president of the United States, made that determination in 1907, and wanted to preserve the home for individuals who were interested in the history of it, his history of his presidency, the decisions and challenges that he faced during that presidency. And we continue now there with Fran, who is our tour guide at the National Historic Site.
We're at the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site as we take in the beauty of the grounds here, and we're joined by Fran, who's been here for over 20 years and has really read up and a great expert on all FDR. And as we're walking over here, one of the things that's most amazing about Franklin Roosevelt is that the deeper you dive, the more depth there is after that. And same with Eleanor. And, you know, I enjoy, and a lot of people, you know, enjoy going to these types of places to get a feel for how the individual thought, for kind of their process, for, you know, how they became president. And when you go to a presidential home, very often you'll go to a place where an individual spent a certain number of years, or the time after they were president, or it was their, you know, their winter White House, so to speak. And a lot of presidents, such as Abraham Lincoln, don't really have a clearly defined home. This is a home where you can really grasp all that is FDR from these grounds and from these museums.
Yes, FDR was always fascinated by the presidency as he was growing up, but it was always with the thought that what would create this president of the United States, in essence, the boy who became the man who became president. And he was thinking, once he did become president of the United States, where he really achieved an ambition that he had said in 1907 he would become president of the United States one day, he decided that he wanted people to come here and learn about him as a person and as president as well. And so he decided when he was president that he would gift this place to the American nation. And he made arrangements that this would become part of the National Park Service. It was a place that he loved from the day he was born here until the day he died. Yeah, he lived in many places throughout his lifetime, but this was home base to him. This was where he always would come to renew himself, to think about problems and issues, brought world leaders here. He loved this place. This was very, very special to him, and so he wanted people to come here and understand what this place meant to him as a person.
Franklin Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt were extremely wealthy men, and for whatever reason, their presidencies, perhaps more FDR than TR, but both, I think, the commonality is they fought for the little guy, and the guy who didn't necessarily have a voice. They thought about the poor. They thought about the indigent. They thought about the individuals who lived in the shadows of society. Why? I mean, why do you think? And why do you think FDR had this tremendous interest in the less fortunate? Was it the times that he was president that he had to rise towards, or was there, you know, an overwhelming feeling that came from within him that this, with this power that he had thought about since 1907 that he wanted to achieve as president of the United States, I'm going to be able to help people?
Well, I think what changed FDR was that he contracted polio, and he had lost the use of his legs. And that changed a man who grew up in wealth, who really didn't know how a poor person lived. In fact, his wife Eleanor had to take him into tenement buildings in New York before he understood that there were people who lived in horrific conditions in this country. So he, growing up here on this beautiful estate, he had no idea what poverty was. But when he contracted polio, he knew what loss was. He lost the use of his legs. And in fact, his wife Eleanor was once asked, did the polio affect your husband mentally? And she said, yes, it did. Because it's only when someone who has gone through the kind of suffering right. that my husband has that they can understand and relate to the problems of mankind. So he could understand during the Great Depression years what people were feeling when they had lost everything, their homes, their jobs, their life savings.
In his writings and in the archives here, did you notice, and can you notice, a shift in his mindset based upon that? And obviously, during that time period, he was able to keep a lot of the affliction, if not most of the affliction, from the American people. Was it something that he, you know, discussed readily with others? Did he have outlets? Obviously, you know, he would make trips to hot springs and so forth. Was it something that he was, you know, actively dealing with in the background, and you can see a shift that, as you referenced, that Eleanor Roosevelt noted?
Well, I think that FDR, after the polio, didn't talk about it too much. He preferred not to talk about it. And people who obviously were his close friends and his family knew what he had gone through, but it wasn't something that he wrote about regularly or talked about regularly. And people certainly knew that he had polio, but they didn't really realize that this man really couldn't walk without the use of braces on his legs, and that he had to lean on somebody on one side in order to at least give the appearance of walking. So that was kept pretty well hidden from people, because he knew the more he talked about it, it could leak out. And he knew that he would never be elected president of the United States if the average person knew that he couldn't walk.
Right. And this brings us back to, you know, a conversation I had last week with Dante Scala, who's one of the top political minds in the country at UNH, and how we have seen, we're debating the change of the presidency, where the presidency has, is either an individual with extremely high name ID because they're a celebrity, or they kind of become a celebrity, and, you know, whether or not the skill set of a great president is on display during the course of what we see now as a carnival-type campaign, which we certainly have a role in the great state of New Hampshire, front row seat, in fact. And that's interesting about FDR, because, you know, we've talked about if some of our great presidents could become president in the current environment. Could, you know, Abraham Lincoln, with his voice and, you know, awkwardness, his story, which may or may not be a positive narrative, become president? Could George Washington, you know, become president? Could Theodore Roosevelt become president with his, you know, bombastic persona? And could Franklin Delano Roosevelt become president, given the polio and the fact that he had a really, you know, good personality? He was entertaining, but, you know, he wasn't necessarily a celebrity type, quote unquote. And that was really interesting what you mentioned, that he, even in that environment in the 1940s, you know, he didn't think that he could become president as an individual who couldn't walk.
Well, back then, certainly people thought if you had a physical disability that you wouldn't be able to function mentally, unfortunately. That was the perception. But, you know, FDR had a lot of help back then to keep his disability secret from the American people, the extent of his disability. He had a great rapport with the press. He courted the press. He would have picnics here for the press. And, yeah, there were people in the press who didn't like him, but there were a lot of them who did. And if, for example, someone was going to take a photograph of him to publish in a paper sitting in a wheelchair, well, another member of the press might jiggle that person's arm so they couldn't take that photograph.
Right.
He really knew how to kind of build this idea to the public that he was in perfect health. There was nothing wrong with him whatsoever. And, you know, people back then, without television, I mean, they couldn't see him mm-hmm. as they would today. It would be all out there. But they, of course, could listen to him on radio, and he was the great communicator. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knew how to draw in the people, calling them my friends, and the warmth of his voice. I mean, he really knew how to work the media, pretty mm-hmm. much.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right, where access is the key to any reporter. And the fact that he gave access was engaging, smart, and you know, every reporter who covers a president, whether it's in 1933 or in 2017, wants to have some sort of relationship with the president of the United States. And the fact that he would engage the way that he did is, you know, what every reporter wants. And he was able to, in my view, bring, you know, reporters to him and create an environment where they were going to portray him in, you know, the light that he wanted to be portrayed in. He didn't do too much. He didn't give them too much. There wasn't too much access, you know, but he, in particular with the fireside chats, where it wasn't like he was doing those every day, it was kind of an event. And when he spoke, he knew, in other words, he knew how to bridge the gap between overexposure and underexposure, where it always seemed like, you know, it was just right. And that was and always will be one of the big keys for any president, is how are you portrayed and how do individuals view you. And obviously it's much different today with social media and everyone having a platform to say or do whatever they want with their First Amendment rights. But he was a master at that. So in terms of the where we're sitting, we're looking out on a roadway which stretches out towards Route 9 and goes towards the home. I assume that Franklin Roosevelt would ride in a vehicle through here. And how did he use the land? What would he do kind of outside of his home that you mentioned was a childhood home and was his home until his death?
Well, the road that we're actually looking at is the original entrance road to the home. And besides it being the entrance to the house for FDR after he contracted polio, it was a way for him to do his physical therapy. So he would walk from the house to the Route 9, the main road here, which was about a quarter of a mile, trying to get back the use of his legs. He had to wear braces on his legs that weighed about 7 pounds each. So he was dragging 14 pounds of steel on his lower body, trying desperately to get to Route 9, which is a bit of a walk even for an able-bodied person. But
looks like about a quarter of a mile.
Yeah, you can imagine how tough it was. And he was convinced that if he made it to Route 9, he would be able to eventually walk again. And that never happened. He used to collapse about three quarters of the way down. So that's that was, you know, around the polio time period. As a boy growing up here, of course, this was an estate where a kid could have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There was, no television, no cell phones, no computers, none of that modern day stuff. But he had horses, so he would ride with his dad every day on horseback, which he loved. There was a pond in the back where he learned how to swim. I mean, he loved the outdoors. And this was a farm. It was a working farm. He loved trees, especially. His dad taught him the love of the trees on the estate. And as a result of that, when he grew up, he always used to say that he was a tree farmer. He would always put down his occupation as tree farmer, not lawyer or politician or president. It was tree farmer. And he thought when he left the presidency, he would use the pine trees here as a cash crop for Christmas trees and such. But it was an estate that he came to love, and he always would feel an affinity with farmers. And so when he became president, one of the very first New Deal programs he started was the Agricultural Adjustment Act to help struggling farmers, because he could relate to them. And that was because he grew up on a farm.
That is Fran joining us here at the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York. An amazing story right there about FDR and his later years and having polio and walking on the street right in front of us, trying to regain the ability to walk, and the president being, you know, unable to make it a fourth of a mile down the road, and with the the weight on his legs and so forth. Absolutely amazing. Learn more about FDR when we go inside the house. Again, this was his boyhood home, and they expanded it over the years in order for a president to live here, as he did later in his years. We'll come back with more from the FDR National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York, on New Hampshire Now after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Well, I can stand beside ideals I think are right, and I can stand beside the idea to stand and fight. I do believe there's a dream for everyone. This is our country.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back. You're on New Hampshire Now. With 91450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com, I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program this hour of New Hampshire Now, brought to you by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. That's my family trust to call for all our plumbing and heating and air conditioning needs. Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning at ParadigmPH.com. Experience the paradigm shift. We are continuing now from the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York, as we step now inside the home to continue our conversation about the nation's 32nd and one of our greatest presidents of the United States. Here's more from Hyde Park.
We are inside the house of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of the greatest presidents of the United States, and we're joined by Fran, who's been an amazing tour guide here. We can see inside the library here, where Franklin Roosevelt would sit, I assume there in the left-hand corner. He has a wheelchair, obviously. We talked about his polio later in life. Tell us a little about this room, and is this the room where he would do most of his correspondences?
Well, this is the library living room, and this was actually added on to the house in 1915 when it was enlarged. The house that his dad bought back in the 1860s was more of a farmhouse, 17-room farmhouse. And then FDR, by 1915, had a growing family. He wanted more space. But also as early as 1907, he decided he was going to become president of the United States one day. So he wanted a grander house for a future president. He was quite a confident young man. So this room he had added on because when he had gone on a trip to Europe, he had seen a room there that he loved very much, and this was almost identical to it. It was a room where the family liked to relax. Today we would call it a great room, where the family would come in and they could, Eleanor could read to the children, they could play board games here, and FDR loved to sit at the desk on one corner of the room and work on his stamp collection, his ultimate way to relax here. But also he could write in here. However, there was another room in this house which served as his study, where he would have important meetings. But this was more of a room where they could just relax, entertain people. He could read. This was a huge library here. FDR loved to collect books, especially books on naval history. He loved the Navy. He had always wanted to become a naval officer, something his father discouraged because he wanted his son to remain home for many years. And so it was a room that the family used just to relax and enjoy themselves.
So we'll go upstairs to that room in a second, but we've mentioned a couple of times now about the fact that he was very confident he was going to someday become President of the United States, and that this particular room was one that he drew from Europe, from a trip to Europe. Obviously, his uncle, Theodore Roosevelt, had been President of the United States and one of the great presidential homes in Oyster Bay. What did he take from him, in your view, in regards to becoming president and kind of the persona that Theodore Roosevelt had, and also, you know, in terms of how you act and how you kind of it's very rare, and I've told this story a number of times before about how when Bill Clinton came to Franklin Pierce's home, and he had this commonality with Franklin Pierce and with all the previous presidents, based upon the fact that only, you know, that many men have been able to knew what it was like to be president of the United States. So, in what ways was Theodore Roosevelt, whether directly or indirectly via family stories, how did he lay the groundwork, so to speak, for Franklin?
Well, FDR admired Theodore Roosevelt greatly, and in fact, he wanted to follow in the same political footsteps that Theodore had taken. So he wanted to be Assistant Secretary of the Navy, which he did become, as TR did. Mm-hmm. He wanted to become Governor of New York, as TR was. So these were all the steps he decided he had to take and follow his distant cousin Theodore Roosevelt's way to become president. And of course, his wife Eleanor was Theodore Roosevelt's niece. Mm-hmm. So they would have visited the White House. And in fact, when they were married, it was T.R. who gave his niece away to FDR in marriage. So there was a very close connection there. And FDR just admired the things that T.R. did to really help people in this country. He felt he was, in many ways, a great humanitarian.
This is New Hampshire Now, 1-9-1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. This hour of the program has been brought to you by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. When we return, more from inside the FDR home, including the spot where Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill met in secret to discuss the H-bomb. That coming up for you in just a little bit here on Hampshire Now. A special Labor Day edition of the program coming to you from the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York, a must visit if you, like myself, are a history enthusiast, in particular, a history enthusiast in regards to the presidency. I'm Chris Ryan. This hour of the program, again, presented by the Prescription Center, and that segment of the show brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah. 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 God above, as for me, all I ever learned from love is how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. But it's not a cry that you hear tonight. It's not some pilgrim who claims to have seen the light. No, it's a cold and it's a very hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back. You're on Hampshire Now with 91450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ronapush, and joining us for the program this hour of Hampshire Now is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices in Age Addiction Recovery Services. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance, check out Choices in Age Addiction Recovery Services at choicesnh.org. Appreciate you joining us for the program. We continue in this hour of the show from the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York. Special Labor Day edition of the Hampshire Now program, taking a look at our nation's 32nd President of the United States. This segment of the show brought to you by New England College, offering over 35 undergraduate and graduate programs, including many, many different options. I encourage you to check out nec.edu for more information. A tremendous higher education learning institution here in the Granite State. Appreciate you joining us for the show. We continue now from inside the FDR home, my favorite spot, without question, of this tour, right here in this segment.
So we're going to take a little bit of a walk down the hall as we are at the FDR National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York. We're joined by Fran, who's given us so much tremendous information about, in my view, one of the great presidents in our nation. And she mentioned the study before, and now we walk into the study, which to me is always the most intriguing place in any great person's home, because from this spot is where that person thought. From this spot is where they read. From this spot is where they determined, various important things throughout the course of their lifetime, and in this case, the presidency. Tell us a bit about this room. I see two phones, which are on the table. It is, as is the case with a lot of these types of rooms, it is small. It is not expansive. He can look out through a door, which is kind of straight ahead and on even level ground with the driveway, a couple steps up from the driveway. So tell me about this room.
Well, this was a room that was probably the most historic room in this entire house, because this is where FDR usually met when he wanted to discuss something very privately with a world leader, and he loved to bring world leaders here to Hyde Park. But this was where he and Winston Churchill talked about the atomic bomb. Mm. And this is where they signed a document called the Hyde Park Aid Memoir, which was a document that talked about the development of the atomic bomb, possible use against the Japanese, and also keeping this information secret from the Russians. And they both initialed this document right here in this room at that desk.
Was that the intention of the meeting between Churchill and Roosevelt? What year was that?
That was September of 1944. And yes, I believe that that was the reason for that meeting. But this room was also a place where FDR liked to relax. And this is where he would hold what he used to call the children's hour, the cocktail hour, which was his way of relaxing with family and friends. He loved to mix the cocktails himself. And even though they had that big, huge library living room where he could do that, he liked to do it in this tiny, intimate little study, just bring a few friends and have his cocktails and tell his stories and have a good time.
What do you think that says, you know, about him? The fact that here's an individual who was extremely wealthy, was president of the United States, but here is this small room where he would bring in, you know, individuals to meet. There's nothing fancy about the room. There's no gold around. It's a very, very plain, honest type study. We mentioned his naval background in the past, and there's several pictures of naval ships that would be behind where he was seating. What does the room, in your view, say about him?
Well, I think it says that he was a person who enjoyed just getting away from the hectic life of being president of the United States. He enjoyed his downtime as much as possible. And there were certain friends that he had that he knew he could relax with and be himself, not the public persona, but the private persona. And so this was that place for him. Just as eventually he would build himself a little retreat away from this big house called Hilltop Cottage or Top Cottage, which was completed in 1938. And that was another place where he could be FDR, the private person, mm-hmm. not the president of the United States, where he could bring his friends and where he could, as he said, escape the mob.
That, I think, is another important aspect of how Franklin Roosevelt was able to deal with the type of enormous pressures that he was under and the country was under during that point in time, where, you know, I referenced Bill Clinton earlier and the Franklin Pierce story, where he understood Pierce and Pierce's decisions based upon, particularly in regards to emancipation, based upon the weight that Bill Clinton felt himself as President of the United States. And, you know, we see President Obama, President Trump currently, and, you know, them trying to figure out how to deal with that weight, how to find things outside of that the presidency in order to take time to themselves and to, you know, think clearly. Because I think, obviously, any job can eat you alive, but this one particularly can. Is that the friends that he was surrounded with, the and the ability to disconnect, how much do you think that played a role in him being able to be level-headed and present the way that he presented in the fireside chats, in meeting with reporters here, to the nation?
I think it was very important for him to have downtime. I mean, when you think about the pressures that he in particular had, dealing with the Great Depression, then dealing with World War II, I mean, he was president for 12 years. So he needed that get away from the public and the pressures of the presidency. And in fact, you know, he also realized that world leaders back then who were dealing with the war in their own countries, they needed that downtime. So he would invite them here, hoping that they could just relax at this beautiful place and not think about the pressures of leading a country that was in the midst of World War II.
Including here in this room, then we'll wrap up in one of the other rooms here in the home. Just from your readings and from your knowledge that you've gathered in studying FDR, obviously he didn't have to make the decision in regards to the atomic bomb, but as you referenced here in this room, it looks like he was prepared to make a decision in regards to that. Do you think that he would have made, and I know it's a difficult question, but do you think he would have made the same decision that Truman made?
Well, it's hard for me to say with certainty that FDR would have made that same decision, because I certainly, you know, didn't know him and didn't know how he would think about stuff. But I'm guessing that he would have wanted to save as many lives as possible. And the reason that Truman made that horrific decision about dropping that atomic bomb was that he was thinking of all the people who would die if that war in Japan continued, even more than had happened in Europe. And he wanted to try to avoid that. He wanted to bring people home from that horrific war, and he felt this was the only way to do it because he didn't think the Japanese would give up.
We'll continue with more from the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York. Our last segment of the show will come to you from FDR's bedroom when we return after this here on Hampshire Now. 1-9-1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. This hour of the program presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services, and this segment of the show brought to you by New England College and NEC.edu. I want to thank our sponsors so much for WKXL On the Road, allowing us to bring you these programs from across the country, across the region. And they are Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, as well as the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce, Dennehy and Boulay, the Spradling Group, and Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
This land, America, so many travel there. I'm going now while I'm still young, my darling, meet me there. Wish me luck, my love, I'll send for you when I can. And we'll make our home in the American land. Over there the women wear silk and satin to their knees. Children near the sweets I hear are growing on the trees. Gold comes rushing out the river straight into your hands. If you make your home, American life.
the sidewalk, whose gutter is not a song. Dear, I hear the beer flows through the faucets all night long. The treasure for the taking for any hard-working man will make his home in the American land.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back. You're on Hampshire Now. On the line, 1415 ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate joining us for the program this hour. New Hampshire Now, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. And this segment of the show brought to you by Orange Leaf Frozen Yogurt at 70 North Main Street in Concord, a convenient location for your next business meeting, offering 16 different flavors of frozen yogurt as well as smoothies in a relaxed environment. Orange Leaf at 70 North Main Street in Concord. We continue now with more from the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York.
So we continue with Fran here at the Franklin D. Roosevelt National Historic Site in Hyde Park, New York. We've made the walk upstairs and into Franklin D. Roosevelt's bedroom, and a couple things along the way. First, an elevator, which Franklin Roosevelt, the President of the United States, would use to pull himself up and down from level to level in this home. I thought that was pretty amazing. You told us a story as well about President Clinton and his time here, because obviously a home like this will bring individuals who are interested in having, you know, something of that nature perhaps in the future, a site that is preserved, a past president or a current president who's thinking about that, and you've had a number of those visitors.
Yes, I mean, we had, of course, President Clinton. We had Hillary Clinton, who was very interested in Eleanor Roosevelt's home. We had, many years ago, Richard Nixon here. And we've had also Laura Bush here 1 year. So we've had all kinds of people who were either heads of government or related to heads of government here.
And will you generally give them the tours? You're talking about Lady Bird Johnson. You brought her through the home as well previous.
Oh, Linda Bird,
yeah.
The daughter.
Yeah,
yes.
She
came through here because she knew that her parents' home would be part of the National Park System. And so she came here wanting to see how FDR had his home furnished and asking why the family left this or that here, which I honestly couldn't answer. But this house is pretty well intact the way it was when FDR was here. I mean, the family took a few mementos, but other than that, it's you're going to be seeing it the last time FDR was here in March of 1945 if you come to visit.
Which is amazing, because even, you know, if you're, I say this about a lot of the homes we visit, even if you're not, you know, interested in the presidency or the president or, you know, the individual themselves, to get a feel for what it was like during that time period or what a home was like in, you know, the 1930s and 1940s, even prior to that, as a lot of this, as you referenced before, was, you know, back to 1907, 1915, which is the FDR bedroom that we're in right now. This is when he chose it was going to be the bedroom in 1915.
Yes, he wanted this wing added to the house. It's actually right over the library living room, mm-hmm. partly because he wanted that library living room created. But he and Eleanor wanted a wing of the house that was theirs, because this house was actually owned by FDR's mother, Sarah Delano Roosevelt. His father died when FDR was just 18, and so his mom inherited this place and owned it until she died in 1941. So FDR didn't really own it until she died, and then he really owned it for only 4 years before his own death in 1945. So he decided he wanted this little wing for his wife and himself to be in. And so it really consists of a bedroom that they shared, a little room next to it, which was supposed to be a sitting room, and then the last room was supposed to be Eleanor's room if she wanted her own little space. But his mother decided at one point that she wanted to move into this section with them, so she took the last room at the end of the hallway in this wing, so that became Sarah Roosevelt's place.
One of the things that's really interesting as well is the what was chosen to go up on the walls. A lot of times, you know, in the home, you'll see, you know, various different things. Here we're seeing, you know, sketches in front of us here. There has been pictures. There's been some embroidery. Was there, you know, a particular, it seems that there's not like, no offense to Franklin and Eleanor Rose, but it's kind of like how I would decorate things, where there's not a lot of, you know, precision. There's things in various different spots. That's not a lot of symmetry, you know, two things. And a lot of times people like to have, you know, the same type of frame or the same type of, you know, painting in the same room. Has there ever been any rationale or discussion about that? He just liked a certain style?
Well, I think he just put things wherever he just thought they would be okay for him. But this room is kind of interesting because it has political cartoons, which I think he enjoyed. But also, above the doorway that leads into the next room, there is a document signed by Woodrow Wilson, which was the commission that made FDR Assistant Secretary of the Navy under Wilson's presidency, something he was very, very proud of. He loved that job. He said next to being president, that was his favorite job. But the other interesting thing in this room, besides the hangings on the wall, is the fact that there are two telephones here. There's one on the little bedside stand, but there's also one on the wall right next to FDR's bed, which he could easily reach. That was the direct phone line to the White House. Mm-hmm. So he could pick that up, and he would get the White House telephone operator, a woman named Louise Hackmeister, or Hackie as they called her. And so he had a direct phone link to the White House whenever he needed it.
Who would he generally call? Would it be the chief of staff, or who would he? Who was his point of contact? The person that he was, you know, would it be depend on what this particular instance was, or would he want the chief of staff usually?
I think it would depend on, you know, the particular instance, and I'm guessing that in the early years of the presidency, one of the people he talked to a lot was Louis Howe, mm-hmm. who helped make him president of the United States. He was his good friend, and he used to kind of shoot his ideas off of Louis, who was such good friends with FDR that he could say to the president of the United States, "You're an idiot," if he didn't agree with him.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this tour. It's amazing to learn about more about one of my favorite presidents, to learn that we have pretty much the same style in terms of decorating rooms. I'll tell my wife that, and I'll make sure she knows we don't have to have everything symmetrical. In the home. Fran, thanks so much for your time. And again, we encourage everybody to come here to learn more about the great Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I am Chris Ryan. We'll come back with more New Hampshire Now after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Fast on a rough road, riding high through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning further from my home. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't serve.